Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, toy department time. It's back. I'm at home for a toy department. This is very exciting. I'm back at my normal spot. How are you doing, man?
Oh man, for my heart palpitated for a second because when you said home, I was like, wait a second, is he at his house? I thought he just said he was at the studio. Like, what's? But you meant you're back at home in the studio.
I'm back at home in the studio, and I guess I was in the city last time I was doing it, but I was getting ready to leave the city. So,
oh, I see. You're home from your travels.
Home from my travels.
Yeah, you were going to tell us Austin City Limits stories, weren't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you have any questions, or are you just looking for
I don't know. Stories? Give me the highlights.
I mean, I was 5 feet away from Megan Thee Stallion twerking. That was pretty cool.
Wow. That's like that's an epic life experience.
That is an epic life experience. She later brought out Miley Cyrus to twerk with her, but I had been gone at that point. I had to leave.
Well, I think you saw the real star, right? I mean,
I did.
If you're looking for the best twerkers, like all respect to Miley, she's not a must see, is she?
No. But the two of them together twerking, I think probably been
a
pretty cool.
A sight to behold, so to speak.
I got to watch Black Pumas from the stage.
Oh,
do
like
Black
Sing Long
Colors. That was pretty cool. And they're, you know, that's a hometown show, so people were going pretty nuts over that. St. Vincent Night Show was really great. So watched her do her new tour.
Yeah, she's awesome.
From like the second row where they tape Austin City Limits, the TV show. So that was fun.
So are we going to see you on like PBS or whatever when they air Austin City Limits?
I don't believe they were taping that performance, but it was in the same room. You know what I mean?
Got it.
I watched, you know, I mean, I guess the big kind of thing that came out was Billie Eilish like ranting about the heartbeat law.
Yeah.
And I was there for that. That was a thing that happened.
Was that your first time seeing her live?
It was not. In fact, it's not my first time seeing her live at Austin City Limits.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it isn't really – it especially having just seen Harry Styles the week before, you know what I mean? Like, it was interesting to compare the energy of the crowds.
Yeah.
She – like, so, you know, there were times, like, she had, like, a – you know, one of those kind of, like – lifts those cranes almost sort of right like that you'd see at a construction site, you know, that would take
sure.
her out over
yeah.
the crowd. And when she'd be on that, like occasionally she would just point the mic downwards or, you know, over the crowd. And anytime she did that, you could just hear the screams like coming up, you know, like the high pitched teenage girl screams. Like the energy of a Billie Eilish show is really interesting. You know, there's some pretty serious devotion there that comes out in some interesting ways. And it's interesting to see it directed at a female artist, right? Like usually the screams are sexy screams. And it's a different energy, you know what I mean? So
How would you describe it?
It's very intense. It's very fevered, I would say. But when you're hearing them disembodied coming off a mic, it almost sounds like a horror movie. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Fevered.
Yeah.
I like it.
So that was pretty interesting. It was great. It was a great couple of days. So many breakfast tacos, Franklin Barbecue, which is, you know, famous. So they don't need my plug or anything, but good Lord, those guys know how to do some brisket.
And
I ate antelope.
I've eaten antelope. Pretty good.
It was a little gamey, I thought.
Uh-huh. Not as gamey as, like, venison.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Not bad when you barbecue it up and throw it on a tortilla.
I mean, let's be serious. Almost everything's good when you barbecue it up correctly.
That is true. That is true. So yeah, it was a fun few days. Really, you know, it's still hot down there in Texas, though. That's
That part's. Did you have like a how to describe, like an artist that you didn't expect to be so good, sort of thing?
Ooh, somebody who like really surprised me.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Blow my mind.
That's like, I have to think about that for a second.
All right, we'll come back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep talking.
Okay. on today's show, we're going to talk about a prequel film to a great television series that I'm very interested to hear what you think about, because I don't quite know what to think. And then we're going to talk about a new show from an old guy that's different from his old show, but also very similar. And then the challenge. Did you think of anything while I was outlining the show?
So there are two things. One, I should have just mentioned it. I don't know even how surprising it is, because I've seen Erykah Badu before, but she was incredible. Gosh.
Yeah, once she shows up, she's as good as it gets.
Yes, and we got the full experience. You know, she got an hour set, mm-hmm. and she showed up, I would say, roughly 25 minutes into it.
Nice.
So that was fun. You get to just sort of do that on the edge of like, she may not show up, right? That may be what's happening here. And then she comes out and she's, you know, dressed in her, insanely dressed and just ripping through hits and talking all kinds of trash. So that was great.
I love it.
Cautious Clay, I thought was pretty good as a surprise.
Okay. All right. Cautious Clay. Yeah. I'll check that out.
I'm gonna say that's it. I like Dago's set. That was another hometown set.
Huh. I don't know either of those names.
But that's what I'll roll.
Clay and Dago.
Glow. Dayglow.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'll roll with.
Okay. You wanna roll with the Many Saints of Newark? Well, that's a weird question.
I do. I do want to roll with the Many Saints of Newark, because if you're wondering what my take on this was, and I know there's been kind of mixed reaction, I feel like, to this, I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And some of that, I think, was just diving back into that world and those characters.
Some of that or all of that?
No, I mean, I like the story too.
Could you elevator pitch the plot to me?
It's not the easiest plot to elevator pitch, but mm-hmm. All right. So let me give this a shot. I would say that it's sort of Dickie Moltisanti, basically trying to step up and run the family after Hollywood Dickie, spoiler alert, meets his maker. Mm-hmm. I guess I should say after after young Dickie kills Hollywood Dick is maybe mm-hmm. that's maybe the better way to put it. And has to battle a mob of or sort of an impromptu mob of black mobsters in Newark who are coming to terms with trying to take what's theirs in the middle of the racial consciousness moment of the 60s. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of about
By the way, you've been in the elevator by yourself for like a minute and a half now.
It's about how young Tony kind of absorbs all of this on his way to becoming older Tony.
Okay, so
that's a lot of the fun of that world, right? Is like watching Livy and Uncle Junior.
Is it time for something?
No, that was a record person wanting something dumb.
Let me stop you real quick. I think, like, okay, so the first stuff you said describing how you felt about this, I think I completely agree with. I just would have changed some of that to all of that, which is to say, I enjoyed it. But I think virtually all of that was just going back into that world with those characters. And look, Leota and the guy who played Dickie were both really good. They both fit right into that world. There were some great Easter eggs that even I, forgetful Kolski, was able to connect to my enjoyment of The Sopranos as a series. And I think ultimately this came down to David Chase saying, what if we just have Dickie Moltisanti basically go through the same character arc Tony goes through over the entirety of 8 seasons or whatever it was in 2 hours, but instead of a psychiatrist, there's black people.
I mean, I think that the inscrutableness is part of the world, right? Like, it'd be pretty hard to elevator pitch any one particular Sopranos episode, right? That's sort of the nature, right? Like, it's that Chase Weiner school, right, of kind of like meandering plot and character development in the midst of all of this other stuff, right? Like, that's how The Sopranos always was. So it's difficult for me to complain about sort of the denseness and the wandering, because that's part of that journey, I think.
Yeah,
right?
No, I mean, I'm not complaining, really.
You're not complaining, but I think some people are.
Yeah. No, but I guess I'm not complaining, but I'm saying I understand the complaints, and I wonder if those are just people that didn't get the nostalgia bump of, like, we're back, because that carried me, quite honestly. Like, I didn't think about much of the things, these complaints that I identify, and I did think of when the movie ended. Like, I wasn't worried about them during the film, because I was having fun. Leslie Odom, too. Like, all the new characters were great.
Isn't it, like, the acting, too, right? Like, you know, Corey Stahl Iga playing characters, right? Like, and having to sort of contend with these performances that we saw and lived with for so long.
Yes.
I thought they did a great job of inhabiting those other performances and still sort of making them their own.
100%. Was the second name you said, was that, or the first name rather? No, the second name, is that the guy who played Silvio?
No, so the woman who played Livia. But the guy who played Sylvia also.
I didn't hear what you said.
Vera Farmiga.
Oh, Vera Farmiga. Oh, of course. Sorry. I thought you... all right. Whoever played Silvio, and I know the actor, but I don't know his name offhand.
He's been in stuff, yeah. And it's weird. To me, I get a lot of, like, John Cassale vibes from him. You know what I mean? Even though he's far, far less accomplished, he kind of has that look. You know what I mean?
He was awesome, and he didn't overdo it. Like, the wig bit, and there was just, it was so good.
The wig bit is tremendous.
It's so good. And
John McGarvey is his name.
Okay. He was great. And the guy who played Pauly, because, like,
You know who that was, the guy who played Pauly?
I do, yeah.
This is the guy from, who was the billionaire in Made for Love.
Yes, he's been in a handful of things, but yeah, he was the billionaire in Made for Love. He I thought, had a really interesting part to play, because one of the things that's so funny about Pauly is, like, his vanity is very absurd in a man of his age, right?
Yeah.
But so the goal, the task this guy had was to, like, justify that vanity in a way, right? And I thought he just nailed it. There's so much that was great, but again, all this stuff feels just like, when I think about it intellectually afterwards, it does feel like, okay, but, like, this is all just fan service, and maybe that's all this is supposed to be, and I don't have a problem with that, but, like, I do understand why some people might be like, I was hoping for, like, more of a complete thing that would stand stronger on its own.
Mm. So, all right. So I'll ask you, I mean, this is there, you know, the ending of this is fairly open-ended, right? Like, the door is open for them to make more of these prequels.
Oh yeah, this is
going to be watching them.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, me too.
In fact,
it was a series, right? I would definitely watch this.
100%, and I think I'm probably going to start watching The Sopranos full time again. Like,
it does remind you revisiting The Sopranos is probably a good idea.
Yeah, I mean it because again, that's what it is. In my mind, they completely succeeded at like a 100% ace the test level of dragging me back. Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. And I was immediately back in the like, oh yeah, I love this show place. So it was great in that way. And if I was like a film critic who'd never watched an episode of television in my life, I don't know how much I could have gotten out of it. Which, again, that's fine. There are enough Sopranos fans to justify making four more of these. So if that's what they do, great. But I don't think this stands alone as much. Especially because, look, that open ending is great for people who are like, this was so much fun, let's do it again. But for people who are like, what is this movie? doesn't help.
I think that's true if you were, if you're a linear plot person, yes. Like, if that sort of stuff is important to you. But, like, there's a lot of great, the mob violence scenes are excellent. You know what I mean?
No, that's true.
Those all stand up on their own if you knew nothing about the world or the characters, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. If you view it as an action film, the action sequences are kick ass. If you view it as like a confusing mob thing that has some action, yeah, I guess that's how you could view it as a, but it clearly is doing more than that emotionally. So I didn't even really affect my in the moment enjoyment of the movie, but I can understand why people might have been like, what is this on its own? That's all.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I think was interesting to me is, right, it's like a lot of the pre-publicity rightly centered around Gandolfini's kid playing young Tony.
You know, actually, I should have said 99% because I think they did the poor kid dirty. They oversold him.
Oh, you do? Yeah. I thought he was pretty good, but it's –
yeah. I thought he was pretty good.
He's not all that central to the
no.
anything that's happening here.
He's not a big part of it. He's only in about half of the movie, right?
Yeah.
And he was good, but not like, oh my God, I see Tony. Yeah. It was like, okay, I get that. I can see how that could have been Tony, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at a minimum, even if he's great, like there are two people playing young Tony Soprano in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. They really oversold him. And that's why I don't want to say it was his fault, because he was perfectly good.
Yeah.
He was definitely oversold.
Well, and you're thinking that maybe it's going to be like Robert Eiler playing AJ, where you're like, uh-oh.
Right.
And there's none of that at all.
No.
Like
there really are no weak performers in this thing.
No. And we didn't mention John Barenthal at all. I thought was also very good. As Tony's dad.
Totally. A character who you really never learn that much about in the series.
No, I had very little thought about him. So, I will probably watch this again, and I'm definitely going to watch some more Sopranos. So,
yeah, I've already watched like four episodes of The Sopranos now.
I can see that. All right, so should we move on to the problem with Jon Stewart?
Yep.
You want my elevator? This isn't even an elevator pitch. This is my quote on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Summation of this. The problem with Jon Stewart is it just hasn't worked out the mix between its comedy and seriousness. It doesn't know what show it wants to be yet.
What if I said it feels to me like that mess you just described is the show it wants to be, and that's I'm just talking about it makes me exhausted.
just yeah, I mean, look.
Like, I don't see how you could be confused. It's too much of a mess, and they acknowledge that, for them to have been confused. They want to make a show that is at turns very funny and at other turns deeply, upsettingly serious.
Yeah.
And I'm just not here for it. I'm not saying it's bad. I think both sides of it have their merits, and Jon Stewart is one of the rare people capable of doing both things. I just have no interest in watching him do both things at once.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the bar is really high for him, which I think is something he's very aware of, right?
Yeah.
But it's a worthy cause that he's talking about in this episode, for sure. Extremely. You know what I mean? Like, he's very right, you know, which is kind of inescapable. But like, I don't know. It's not a fun watch. There needs to be more funny in this, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, John Oliver walks a very fine line, and a lot of it has to do with choosing the topics, where it is very clearly a comedy show, but he addresses some serious issues. But everything is approached from a place of comedy. It is not a serious show, right? Like, right. That's the important distinction.
When he gets angry, you know there's going to be a joke coming within a minute, right?
Exactly. And there's no jokes in a 15-minute interview with people who have either lost loved ones or are dying or are irreversibly handicapped from this horrifying U.S. government practice, and now the VA won't take care of them and won't tell us why. Like, yeah. Come on. I don't have the energy. I literally do not have the energy. This show requires energy.
Yeah. And, right, it does. It's just too heavy, man. And I understand that John Stewart's not going to want to do John Oliver's show, nor should he. You know what I mean?
But then do W. Kamau Bell's show. Okay?
Right.
Have it be a serious show where you occasionally make a quip. But like,
there was another guy who, White Snack, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he have another Daily Show alum, actually? Didn't he? He had a show in a very sort of similar space, right? That was like the problem with this.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it was funnier. So
yeah, I don't know. I like Jon Stewart, and like I might watch him just doing like we really need to talk about this shit stuff. You know, I might watch that. I'm more likely to watch that than this.
Yeah, look, I'm probably gonna check out another one or two of these and hope that he's figured out the formula. But it's definitely going to be down my list of things because I got a nice backlog of stuff I'm trying to catch up on right now. So,
well, and just like I think maybe there needs to like people creators should realize like when a lot of people when they sit down to choose their entertainment option for the evening at this point in the world and America just want to like. You're either someone who wants to learn and be informed or you're someone who wants to like get away and like being herky jerky whipped back and forth between the two is again, it's just exhausting.
Yeah. Like if I want to be outraged by the failures of government or the military industrial complex or whatever, like that's on my phone all day, man. You know, like it's not hard for me to find things to be like to find righteous anger as an emotion. So like and finding someone who can make me laugh at an expert level, that I'm missing that. So I'd love it if you could do that. Can you make me laugh?
And it's just hard to laugh at like a, you know, interstitial comedy bit about a burn pit after watching like a brutal interview with the people who've been, again, like irrevocably damaged by it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. you know, hope we get rid of the burn pits, though. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck that nonsense. I mean, and look, to his credit, it's a thing I didn't really know much or hardly anything about that should be a huge issue that, you know, pertains to an issue I at least know a little about, which is that we, like, the vast majority of people who scream about respecting and doing things for the troops are lying dirtbags. And I don't mean normal humans. I mean politicians. It sucks. But this is not the way I want to learn about it.
No, sure isn't. All right, let's get into the challenge.
Thank God.
I am more convinced that my conspiracy theory from last week that the producers intervened to get this game moving is correct after watching this week's show. Because that whole timeline was pretty much the, you know, scenes on. And then, you know, this twist at the end, obviously we don't know what the twist is, but it sure seems like the show is hell-bent on not letting them create any more rookie teams, right? So I feel like this is it's almost like that we have started the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like maybe this week was just the play-in games or whatever, but we have moved from the regular season to the playoffs, and it is now game on. You know what I mean?
No, I think we've moved from like December to January, or maybe like we just got through the All-Star break.
Okay.
You know, like people have still been choosing their sides, getting situated, you know, tapping their allies on the shoulder, sneaking away to try to figure out how the game is going. Now,
drastic increase in the number of whispered conversations this week.
Yes. Yeah. But now it's on and these games matter. And yeah. I mean, you already mentioned it, but I think we should start with, what do you think the twist is?
I mean, I just think it's every man for himself now. No more partners.
It seems like that almost has to be it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what else they could do.
Yeah.
Because two people don't have partners, right? or without partners. So either they have to pair them up in some way, or it's just going to be no partners, right? Like, what else can they do?
They could do a teams situation.
They could. Yeah.
I mean, I guess. The question is, how would they do a teams? I mean, they could do like a rookies versus veterans. Like, hey, you wanted it to be rookies versus veterans. Well, we weeded out the weaker rookies, so have at it. By the way, shouts to Patina. She performed.
She sure did. She sure did. That elimination look hard as fuck.
Yo, that is one elimination I like. So many of the eliminations, I have like a curiosity about. You know, if I had gotten to do that when I was not 40 years old and out of shape, like, what would that have been like? I had no interest in this. None whatsoever. Just
all
like
I could,
the
could
burning.
Think about is my back.
Yeah. The burning in the quads and the back and the arms. Like, I could practically feel it on the couch.
Yeah.
And not just because my body hurts all the time.
If I was like bending down like Amber B or holding her up like Jeremiah.
No. I could see no route to not being in horrifying physical pain for days after doing that elimination. As soon as they fell off the first time, I was like, oh no, this is much harder than I thought it was.
Yeah. You know how much respect I have for Amber B. I felt like she really left it all out there.
Yeah. And Jeremiah was pretty good.
Yep. And they didn't even get to the puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't seem like the puzzle was much, right?
No, the puzzle was, it was not the hardest puzzle.
No. It was more like a very, very simple, like, picture puzzle. But
I don't really have a burn of the week, but the closest thing to it was, for me, was Devin pointing out that Corey solved what a puzzle elimination without touching a piece.
Yes. That was a good one. I have two others, but you're right. It was not a great burn week. Corey did at ITM where he said, when it comes to Ashley, who can trust her? Which is just like funny and not the most clever thing, but like agreed.
I think Ashley gets a little bit of a bad rap for that. Like, yeah, she screwed over Hunter that one time, but it was like 10 years ago and he kind of deserved it.
Yeah, but
like,
she's
pretty awful to her.
No, but she's fooled you. Just because you can't remember the specifics of how she has flip-flopped over the course of her many years on the challenge, like she is a repeated challenge flip-flopper. She is completely untrustworthy and wildly paranoid at all times.
Yeah, the paranoia thing is like, I don't really think that people are gunning for her all that much in general. Like, I don't think they've targeted her in the last couple of years, per se.
And a lot of the time, she ends up targeted because she's so paranoid that she's being targeted that she does something crazy.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, beside the point. I just thought it was funny when Corey said that. The other one is also Devin was on fire this episode, even though it wasn't a lot of burns. Like, this was a great Devin episode. And I thought he navigated the game really well. But when they were in the middle of the elimination and Jeremiah and Amber B like were winning but had started struggling, did you catch Devin yelled, try looking deep into each other's eyes?
Yeah, that was great.
So I don't know if that's a burn, but I did think it was funny.
It was funny. And while we're here, I think the show essentially laid out control of the game for us, right? There are three factions, which is this also to me is interesting because I don't think we've really had three sort of distinct factions.
Listen,
right, of bets.
And we've just got, before we go through them,
okay,
not so much the game as Corey laid it out for us as he took notes in a notebook like Laurel used to do. They showed his notebook with like three little columns of like who was with who. It was great.
Yeah, he's got it. And, you know, yeah, Corey's leading one faction with rookies in it.
Yeah, and I feel like he, like, watched old challenges and saw Laurel doing that and was like, ooh, she's on to something. I'm going to try that out.
You know, and then you got Josh leading a faction, like, oddly capably, it seems like. and then you've got Devin. And those are the three people who I'd say are in control of the game right now.
Yeah, what makes me laugh the most on the challenge is Josh trying to calm people down all the time this season.
Yeah.
And still, the biggest moment of the season to this point was when he completely lost his shit.
Yeah. Yep. Josh and also Nelson, not known for being a calm sort.
Being like Corey, you gotta calm down. That was irony at its best.
It's so great. It's like you're playing with your emotions. And I'm like,
when Nelly has to tell you to chill, you know you've gone too far.
Yep. Yep. So Ed correctly identified, like, people don't like that you're playing with rookies and you're being real obvious about it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, he had the whole thing nailed pretty much.
It's great to see these guys grow up and figure out the game.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. I mean, you know, look, this has been a big year for bets figuring out the game, obviously. Wes had a great tweet about people sort of complaining about the show and talking about it's like you know, you watch an NFL game and it's a blowout. It's not the game's fault. And that's kind of what this season's been so far. It's been a blowout. And, right. You know, it's just because some people in the game are playing it a lot better than the others. And, you know, that's all about to change. Right.
Well,
so
that's
exciting.
There's like when you have a big rookie season like this, there's a weeding out process, right?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think some of the best rookies are not here now.
I agree.
But it gives, I was thinking about this earlier, like it really gives credence to Priscilla's strategy of just kind of stay in the background.
Yep.
Keep your head down.
Yep.
Just try to survive. And hopefully you'll make it to a point where the dynamic changes in some way that it won't just be about whether you're a rookie or not.
Well, and the thing, and by the way, Priscilla is if we had to pick an MVP, I think I would pick Priscilla because
Of this episode?
Well, I mean, it's kind of the last episode, this episode and the very end of the last one. Like, from the moment Ashley threatened her, even if it was producer orchestrated, right? From the moment Ashley basically threatened her in the elimination chamber, I think she's handled herself perfectly. And it's proven by the fact that by the time they got to the deliberation, no one was even mentioning her name to go in.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think Nani said it well. Like, everyone's done the same thing. No one's really that mad at you.
Exactly. So. And they're just, what they're mad about is that she made the right move that puts everyone at jeopardy.
Right. And she made the right move because Ashley spelled it out.
Exactly. So. Now, I think she would have been onto it anyway, because to your point, like, I think there are people who are in the background because they're just like, oh God, I don't know what to do. Just keep me out of it as rookies. And I think there are rookies who are in the background because they're sitting and watching and trying to figure out the game. And I think Priscilla is the latter. And I think like she made the right moves to A, put herself in the best situation, and B, kind of earn respect.
Yeah. I'm not sure her physical game will be strong enough for her to get to the finals yet, but the Schultz game is on point for her, no doubt.
No, and she looked pretty good in the elimination, so I wouldn't count her out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not. I just said it's a question mark. I don't, you know, I'm not saying she's not. She doesn't have what it takes. You know what I mean? And some of these girls could surprise you like Bettina just did, you know?
No doubt.
No, I was looking at Bettina as the weakest girl in the house, just like everybody else.
And I still think she is, but I don't think the gap is very big.
No, me neither. Me neither. If anything, she's just the smallest girl in the house right now, I think, right? So.
Yeah, maybe the least athletic, but, you know, again, not by a lot. She really held her own. And that was, like, major endurance and muscle fatigue challenge. So it was really impressive.
Yeah, impressive performance from her. I think I had Logan as the MVP of this episode.
Mainly he's on the list too.
For negotiating that deal in the mud pit to win the challenge. I thought that was pretty artful, actually. Especially for a guy not speaking his first language.
Well, and he talked about it afterwards like he really knew what he was doing, you know?
Yeah.
Like he handled the whole situation really well, and like, you know, I think he also recognizes, you can see in his conversation with Big T, that like he knows where he's at in this game and who are the people he can trust and not.
The other thing you can see in this conversation with Big T is that Big T has big time googly eyes for him.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Like, just the look on her face of like, I can't believe I bagged this dude, is pretty great.
So let me ask this. If this is every person for themselves now,
yep,
who do you think is in the best position?
CT.
Yeah, I completely agree. Why?
Because he's CT.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like, ultimately,
I do think people are going to come for him.
How?
Though.
If it's single eliminate, if it is every man for themselves, who wants that smoke?
Right. Everyone wants him out of the game. It's how is the thing, right?
The only, you know what person I mean? Who would have had the stones, maybe, is Fessy. Nobody in that house is going to ask for CT in an elimination. And if he somehow gets put in, nobody is going to be excited to go in there.
Right. It's like, I don't even know what you do, right? Because, right, ordinarily, like, let's say it was Fessy you're trying to get rid of, right? You're just hoping for a non-physical elimination. But CT's so good at puzzles.
He is the best puzzle person in the house and arguably the strongest physically. Now, like, there are younger guys. If it was, like, a straight-up hall brawl, you know, Corey might put up a fight, man. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't count him totally out, but
Corey's extra jack this year.
He's
no doubt.
Huge. But, and look, he showed his endurance in this challenge too. Like, a lot of times guys with muscles like that are the ones who fatigue out, and he did not. So all respect to Corey, but like, He doesn't want a hall brawl with CT, that's for sure. Even if he has the best chance of winning it.
But, look, CT not exactly undefeated in eliminations. So, can be beaten. You know what I mean?
I think you have to approach it that way. But that fact does not, in my mind, make him more likely to go in. So, to me, if
but
this
I
is
do
a...
think, I do think there is a movement among the vets to get rid of the champions, the past champions, right?
Well, there was. But what I'm saying is, if it becomes, every man and woman for themselves game, and that means someone's going to have to go mano a mano with CT, I'm not sure how aggressively they'll be pursuing the eliminate former champions angle on the men's side.
Yeah. You know what CT's all-time record in eliminations is?
It's probably under 500.
It is not. Okay. But he's 6-5.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's been there a lot. That's 11 damn eliminations.
Well, but it's also telling. He has 53 daily wins.
That's what I'm saying. And he's probably been on
only 11 eliminations, which means he doesn't get sent in all that often.
He's definitely been on more than 11 seasons.
Right.
Like that's the thing. It's not about his record. It's about the fear factor. I almost think if they go, the single person teams, I think you just punch CT's ticket to the final.
Yeah. Do you know how many seasons he's been on?
How many?
19.
Yeah. So.
And that is not counting the 3 spinoff shows that he was also on, the Chance versus Pros and Stars.
So basically, if we count those, if we count those, he has one elimination appearance for every 2 seasons he's been on, right? Now, look, some of that is because he got himself kicked off the show, but most of it is because nobody wants to see that guy in an elimination. Nobody.
Yeah.
Especially if it's one-on-one.
Man, I'm looking at this, and I think you have to say that, I think we've reached the point now where the him versus bananas argument is kind of Tom Brady versus Montana. Like, yeah, it was an argument.
Or Peyton Manning even.
Yeah. But like, I think it's settled now, you know?
Well, I think, I think you could still, people could still have an argument about like, hey, at his peak, bananas was the best bet to win a challenge of all time, right? But
right. I mean, that's the Montana argument, right?
Exactly. Like, or the Peyton Manning or the Aaron Rodgers. But yeah, like, you know, at a certain point, like, there's a, you know, with to use Brady example, he has performed at such a high level for so long, and the totality of his career so outpaces every other person to ever do it, that it's silly to argue about who's the greatest of all time.
If you just take Tom Brady's career since Peyton retired, it's Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah, that's the point. And you know, like people like me who back in the day tried to say Peyton or Aaron Rodgers was the better quarterback, like I still believe the best of those guys could do more for me on a football field than Tom Brady. But I can't pretend that Brady hasn't had the far better career, and that has to count for something when we're talking about the greatest of all time. So he's the great, like, I can't, you know what I mean? I might still think, like, if I had 21 guys making up my starters on a football team and I needed to just slot in a quarterback, I still think the best version of Aaron Rodgers is the best person I can put in that spot.
Yeah.
But that only counts for so much. Brady has been so good and accomplished so much over such a long period. Like, you just can't. You can't debate it. And that's CT.
Yeah, and unlike Brady or Rodgers or Peyton or any of them, like, he's in as good a shape right now at age 41 as he's ever been.
Yeah, well, that's like Brady.
Well, Brady, I don't know that Brady's in as good a physical shape as he's ever been. You know what I mean?
Bro. I mean, he might not be quite as fast. I'm sure CT isn't quite as fast as he was at 23.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But Tom Brady is in phenomenal. His hair is better than it's ever been.
Yeah, but it's not his.
Well, you don't know that. He could be. He could have some.
Yes, I do.
Well, no. Hold on. You know it's not. You know it's not like the hair he would have if he had never done anything to address his hair. But like, for all you know, Alex Guerrero has a secret hair growing formula that allows you to regrow your own hair totally naturally. Like, you don't know. Maybe if you weren't eating strawberries, you'd have more hair.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe he's the most high profile hair transplant recipient since Wayne Rooney.
I guess, but I think you got to give a little credit to LeBron James.
Oh yeah, forget about LeBron. That yet another way those two are similar. Hair games.
Yeah, I wonder if LeBron talks to Alex Guerrero. Like, I think I need to talk to Alex Guerrero.
I kind of think LeBron has his own dudes. You know what
I
mean?
I'm kidding, but CT might not. So he may actually be using Alex Guerrero, you know, the Boston link.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I think CT lives in Florida now too, right?
There you go. You go. It's not a coincidence. Have we ever seen CT and Tom Brady in the same room?
We have not, but we should, frankly.
It's something that needs to happen.
Let's get CT on the shop. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. One of the great athletes of all time. Who are we kidding?
Yes. Needs to happen. Let's go, Rich Paul. Put it together. all right.
I know Drake is a challenge fan, but I don't know if LeBron is.
LeBron should be a challenge fan.
I would think, right? Seems like it's up his alley.
It really does. Really does. I feel like he just needs to see it to be into it. All right, anything else you want to add about this episode? Because I feel like we've really gone down the rabbit hole now.
No, I thought it was a good one. I'm looking forward to the home stretch of the season, so to speak. The post All-Star break action.
Yeah. How many people do you think are going to be in this final?
It's a great question, because there's still a lot of people left right now. And it doesn't, like, I don't know. It feels like the middle of the season, right? But if we're going individuals now, it like feels like there's a lot of people left to eliminate as well. So
it sure
I don't know.
Does seem like we got a ways to go.
I wonder if there's going to be like a purge.
I'm guessing like 10, by the way. It's one of them.
Wow, that'd be big.
I
guess the last couple finals we've seen with All-Stars and the one before that, they've had a lot of people.
Yeah, minimum of 8, right?
Yeah. And the last one had 10, right? And then they just eliminated one after the first part of the challenge.
Yeah. I mean, we're only 9 episodes in, so.
Yeah, but how many episodes have there been the last couple seasons? Not more than 18, I'd say.
Well, let me tell you. Double Agents was 22. Oh, well, that includes the reunion. Sorry.
So 21. All right. Yeah, so maybe a little less than halfway. Well, that's exciting. I'm glad there's more.
Yeah, 19 was the – sorry, 19 with competition episodes, 19 competition episodes.
All right, so I was about right.
Yeah, so here we are, halfway.
All right.
I can't wait for the back half of the season, though.
I think it's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic. And I like the three-headed monster dynamic that we have. I don't know how long that's going to remain, and particularly maybe this week that all sort of shakes up in some way, but that dynamic will be interesting to see how people get picked off.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, but Corey, you know, Corey lost an ally this week in Jeremiah. So, we shall see. And I don't, was Amber B rolling with him too? I don't remember.
Who knows? But shout out to that lovely couple staring deep into each other's eyes on a plane back to America.
I think there was some real stuff there.
Yeah.
Are you betting that they're still together?
I don't know about still together, because I never know like where these people live and stuff. I think it's usually hard, but I think they legitimately liked each other.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Jeremiah is leaving Mississippi. You know what I mean? Think he's headed out to California.
Could be.
Yeah. So maybe that'll make it easier. We'll see. All right, let's leave it there for now, and we'll do some homework.
Yeah.
So everybody in the world's talking about Squid Game. I have tried to on Netflix, by the way. I've tried to sort of avoid that conversation just so I can come into it clean.
Yep.
It's a Korean dystopian Game of Thronesy type of thing. That's about as much as I know.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. That's not what I meant to say. Hunger Games. That's
Yeah. Or as I like to think of it, a Running Man type situation, because that's what I think of Game of Thrones. Or of now I'm doing it.
Right. Sorry.
Thanks for nothing.
Sorry. Where are you on this Game of Thrones prequel, by the way?
I mean, I'm in on that. Why wouldn't I be?
I mean, I'm in too, but I don't know. Like, I don't like that they're all dragoning up all the pre-stuff.
Well,
the dragons are not my favorite part of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but the dragons are the dragons, man. I mean, come on. Right?
I guess, sure,
they're not your favorite thing if you're like a deep Game of Thrones head, but like they're dragons. Of course, that's the advertisement.
Yeah, you're right. But I don't know. Like, I like them. Like, you know, they're like the nuclear bombs of that world. You know what I mean? Like, the specter of them is far more interesting than the reality of
them. Let me ask you a question. You got a World War II movie. You putting the nuclear bomb in the trailer or what?
No, I'm not. But that's why they don't let me make trailers.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, so we're watching Squid Game.
I would argue, just to tie it off, I would argue there has never been a film with a nuclear bomb that has not showed said nuclear bomb in the trailer.
Right. You get the mushroom cloud. Well, the ones where the bomb doesn't go off, I'm assuming they're not showing the bomb. Do you think the trailer for Dr. Strangelove had the bomb in it?
Everyone with an actual explosion has it in the
show
with
that explosion. Yeah. No, there's a reason they don't let me make movies. I know a lot of people who have watched Squid Game in like one or two sittings, so it'll be interesting to see how far we get.
Can't wait.
With that one. And then what was the other thing we're doing? Oh, Dave Chappelle, right? We're going to talk about Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, we're going to take a look at the new Dave Chappelle special and talk it over. And there's also baseball playoffs that are going to be thrilling to discuss, and we're going to save that for next week.
Yeah, there will be baseball playoffs. Basketball is getting ready to start.
Woo.
Football is in full swing. USA World Cup qualifier tonight. I am all kinds of fired up about.
Okay, stop it, or we're going to end up talking about it right now. We got to go.
Yeah, we're going to be busy. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.